Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Once again, we get to interview Gary Watts, a real estate economist and broker with Impact Real Estate in Mission Viejo. Gary, thanks again for being with us.
You're very welcome, Bruce.
We're going to start out by picking on Carr just a little bit and then seeing why some of their predictions were not realized. At the end of 2005, Carr came out with a prediction that in 2006, California would have about 600 plus resale homes, and the builders would build about 200,000 new homes. And there was a comment about 50,000 less than they needed to build to meet demand. Why do you think this demand never materialized?
Well, I think that the builders, first of all, I think they finished the year building almost 220,000 either single-family homes or condos, so they got very close to it.
Now, this is 2006?
Yes, I think so. Or, I'm sorry, 2005, if I remember the number.
Yeah, 2005, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, the prediction for the 200, it was quite a bit short. Really was.
Right. I have no knowledge as to why they missed the demand. And actually, 2006, I don't know if it was so much as a lack of demand as it was the fact that interest rates had a profound effect on the buyer mentality. With the Federal Reserve raising the rates 17 times, by 2006, it hit hard in the second quarter in the state of California. And we saw buyers leave the market at about a rate of about 15% in historical terms, 30% if you're measuring it off of peaks.
Okay. Now, the interest rate went to what percentage fixed?
Well, we were hovering in the 5.6 to 5.75 range, and it moved up to 6.7%. So it went up about 1%.
Okay, and that made the buyer just want to wait, or it made it unaffordable? What was their rationale, do you think?
Well, I think it was twofold. I think the interest rate's rising, and for some reason, the media across the board, both in print and on the airways, started thinking that the bubble talk from early 2001 and 2 was actually going to happen. And I think those two influences really slowed the market down.
So you think people reading too much negative news actually started to take hold?
Yes.
Okay.
I've challenged the local medias about it when they're interviewing me, but I understand, because part of my education was in psychology, so I know that the mind goes to the negative side about 87% of the time. So, you know, I can understand why they go on the negative, because it tends to hold readers' interest and attention.
Exactly. Well, it's also how people make decisions. If they view real estate as turning negative, they will not stretch their budget as far to buy.
No, that's absolutely true. But the problem with the media was that they were, although factual, they were not accurate.
Okay.
And that is what my contention was.
Okay.
You can talk about sales slowing down 30%, and then they lead into the fact that this is going to cause future problems. Well, 30% from an all-time high, yes, but they never put into perspective it was only down maybe 10 or 15%. From long-term historical averages, and therefore it wouldn't affect the market that much.
Okay.
But they led with the big, scary banners.
Carr repeatedly refers to affordability as equal to real estate well-being. How do you feel about that statement?
I have to disagree with that.
Okay. I'm glad.
Because, again, it goes back to what we talked about previously, and that was that the affordability index, unfortunately, there's nothing out to replace it. No one's developed something new. We've got some new people like Kay Schiller trying to come out with more accurate ways of predicting and forecasting real estate. You have First American Real Estate Solutions developing some new systems. But until they're in place and tried and true, everybody relies still back on the old formula.
I see. I actually like not the old formula, and I don't like their conclusion at all because I think it's completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
High affordability does not equal real estate well-being because most of the time when affordability goes up, you're losing price.
Exactly.
Okay. So I don't understand where they came up with that statement, but I do believe that low affordability has a negative impact on, you know, where we ultimately end our boom. So one of these days, if we get a chance to debate, we'll cover that more fully.
Okay.
California's come off of three exuberant real estate markets, 1980, 89, and 2005. So the transition years, 81, 90, and 06, in your opinion, did the end of each of these booms have a different or common event that set in motion the changes that were experienced the years that followed the booms?
The common event would be the decrease of inventory. The builders being essentially wiped out in each one of those down periods.
Okay. So
allowed demand to catch up with the supply.
Okay. In that transition year, then, we ended up having an overabundance of new homes that had to be worked through. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay.
And then the transition year of the first beginning of the decline, and then what you saw is more buyers in the marketplace the year we're transitioning out.
Okay. Is there an event that caused people not to want the new homes? To me, there has to be an event that caused that. And that's kind of what I'm searching for. Is there an initial event that we can look at and go, okay, that's the same every time?
Well, over your different periods, Bruce, one was inflation out of control. Another one was a massive loss of jobs.
Okay.
This third one, I'm surprised the market is reacting the way it is. It's not as bad as the media is portraying it. But with low interest rates, high unemployment, this market's holding its own despite what is being said about it.
Okay. You just said high unemployment. You meant high employment, of course.
I mean, high employment.
Right. We have what historically would be a no-brainer to have a continuing real estate boom, and yet we don't. So that's – we really don't.
We don't, and that's largely because of – I would attribute it to two factors. One is the overbuilding by the builders over this last cycle, getting too excited from the summer of 2003 to 2005. That 24-month period, everybody accelerated their building schedules because they were just jumping in. People were standing in line. They had so many reservations for homes, not even, you know, where concrete wasn't even poured yet, that they started accelerating their building. And in doing so, you had also at that time period the investors, speculators, and flippers going into the market in large numbers.
But they were told by the people they listened to that this was necessary inventory, that there was a shortage and the demand would not disappear. So I really think they were listening to people that were telling them that according to our model, we can't have a problem. And yet we do. And so I guess that's I'm trying to get back again to.
Well, where is our problem?
Our problem is I think we've lost the ability to pass on the inventory to the next buyer on a brisk enough pace. And to me, that is affordability problem.
Well, the inventory is being absorbed. And as long as the builders hold back from bringing a lot of new product online, we're just going to go through this hangover period, which will last probably no more than through this year.
Okay. UBS came out with something probably in November, and they had talked about it. They thought it would take take 3 years, but maybe they could be wrong. They certainly have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I checked inventory for sale, as far as months available for California, we were at about 9.1 months. At what level does inventory begin to affect price?
Well, your equilibrium is 5 to 6 months supply
okay.
of housing. That's when you normally have an equal number of buyers and sellers.
Okay.
And I think your listeners who are sellers need to realize that excluding the last couple of years where you put your house up for sale and you had multiple offers in an hour, the real world of real estate in across the United States is that it takes, for a properly priced home, 2 to 3 months to sell. And if you're trying to squeeze a little few extra bucks, 6 months is the average.
Okay.
So that's the supply. Now, some areas of Southern California don't have that high of inventory, and others do.
Correct. It's once again, those averages are, we have to deal with them, unfortunately. But San Diego, for instance, has 22 months of condos, so they're obviously hurting a lot more than probably Orange County is.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Do you think the inventory is likely to decline or increase in the next 9 months or by the end of the year?
I think we're going to see a decline in inventory.
Okay. Now, why do you think that?
Twofold. Number one is that the media will be forced by the second quarter, starting by summer, to start measuring last year's second quarter and third quarter numbers with this year's third quarter numbers. And last year is when the beating started to take place. So I think you're going to start seeing some more positive information coming out of the media, number one, making people think the bottom is probably it and I should get in. And then you're going to get a kicker from the Federal Reserve lowering the interest rates.
Okay.
And those two things happening simultaneously in the late second quarter and beginning of the third is going to start having the latter half of 2007 be a pretty good year for real estate.
Okay. In just the past few months, our real estate vocabulary has had to resurrect the terms short sale, trustee sale, and REO. Do you feel that a significant numerical increase in all three are on their way?
Numerically, yes. Percentage-wise, it's still not enough to affect have any large effect in the housing market generally. It will affect certain counties more than others.
Okay. Do you think some counties will pretty much escape unscathed?
Yes.
Okay. Even though their foreclosure numbers, again, percentages, and I understand this is exactly what the news media goes after. They go after something that was almost an historic low in 05 and can add percentages that look very scary, and the numbers are still very low.
Oh, they're incredibly low.
Well, actually, now I think they're not incredibly low, and that's where I think maybe we're going to have a problem.
Well, let's discuss that.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. We've got, if we duplicate what we just had, Rick Sharga from Realty Track, they come out with a monthly number of 16,273 NODs in California.
Right.
And that's for a month, and that's in February. If you multiply that out, that's somewhere around 195,000 NODs, which is 2.38% of our stock of homes. I don't consider that an insignificant percentage, do you?
Well, now you're talking about, and this is where listeners, readers, viewers get confused, the difference between notices of default and actual foreclosures.
Sure, let's
talk.
They
lump them together.
Okay.
Now, the historical average for the state has been only 8% of those go to actual foreclosure.
Gary, that's only true in a good year.
No, that's a historical average. Now, let's take a look at where the foreclosures are occurring.
Okay, let's go back to that other point, though,
okay.
If you don't mind. In 97, we had 70,000 trustee sales in Southern California, and that represented over 50%.
In what year?
97.
Okay.
That represented over 50% of the NODs. So you have a...
And yet 97 was the year real estate began to appreciate in California.
Okay, but I'm pointing out that what we have ahead of us is, you're correct, that it's somewhere around 10% that revert to the lenders, or somewhere around 10% that go to the trustee sale courthouse steps.
Mm-hmm.
But when we get these numbers to increase, and if housing does what it did before, you end up having a lot greater percentage go to the courthouse steps. It's not 8%.
Well, the percentage might, numerical numbers may increase, but when you talk about 1996 or 97 and having these huge numbers, we had about 6 million homes in the state. Today we have 8.2 million homes and condos in the state.
Correct.
So you're looking at a 25% differential.
Right.
In the structure. So, I mean, I look at the numbers today and I see that, you know, we're not that far above the 92 average, but if I take it with the extra number of homes in the state, I find us below the average since 1992.
Okay.
Are they increasing here dramatically? Yes, but I think we're seeing the worst. It's going to be the worst in a shorter time period than we have in the past.
I hope you're right. I actually think the worst is yet to come because of what's going to happen to the loan situation. And we're going to talk about that, I'm sure.
The reason I feel this way,
okay,
is that most of the defaults in the state are coming from loans originated between January of 2005 and February of 2006. There's a median age of these defaults being around 15 months during that time period.
Okay.
Now, what's interesting is the default started in 2005. So far, only 32% of those defaults have gone down. That means 68% of these people solved their problem.
Okay, when you say go down, what do you mean?
They go to foreclosure. They lose their house. Only 32% during this time period.
Okay, that's a big difference from 8%.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It is. But remember, when I talk about 8%, I'm talking about the whole thing. Here we're measuring 32% of the most dangerous loans. Anybody who bought a house in the beginning of 2004,
correct,
saw 20% plus appreciation on their house. They're okay.
As long as they didn't get a credit line.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
So, you know, the fact that anything before the summer of 2005 is probably in a neutral to a positive position, and they're not worried. So we're only dealing with a small segment of the market.
Okay, let's go backwards then and see if that holds true. When we had a downturn and foreclosures went up between, say, 90 and 97.
Right.
The predominant loan there was a fixed-rate HUD loan.
Okay.
And the foreclosures, you know, I used to attend the HUD auctions and buy properties at sometimes a very large discount. So I guess I'm wondering how did the downturn last? Again, it was unemployment and stuff. I know we're getting a little bit involved here, but I think the loan problem that we're creating right now could be an equivalent downturn creator, if you will, for lack of a better word.
No, I understand, and in certain markets, I have to agree with you.
Okay. When you say certain markets, what would they be, you think?
Well, I find it interesting. There's almost a dichotomy. You've got some of your highest foreclosures in the Los Angeles market numerically, but yet if you measure it by homes, it's very small, and that's probably why the housing market in Los Angeles is still appreciating, even during these downturn periods. Both the median price of the home and condos are up. And yet, if you look at Riverside in San Bernardino, where you've had your major building, that's an area where your inventories are inordinately high, almost like San Diego in the condo market. And I see that can have some problems in those areas, and yet they're still showing, I mean, Riverside finally went negative on their condos this month for the first time, but the rest of the time, these people have been pulling in good appreciation numbers, even though there have been these large notices of default filed.
Well, as you know, the NODs are really not as significant as the properties that end up reverting to the lenders.
Exactly.
Or become short sales and start really hurting the comps. But just like in 89, when you talked about a negative scenario that was yet to occur, I view what is about to occur as really inevitable. And so I guess that's where we differentiate. I really don't see a pleasant ending for this. I think we're going to have a downturn. So that's
what... Yeah, no, are you thinking across the board?
Well,
prices across the whole state going down?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't see... And again, that's historical. Looking backward, there were pockets, of course, of certain places that didn't go down as much last time, but there was pretty much everything was not, there wasn't too much unscathed. So, yes, I do. I really do think that a lot of these loans that are going to cause problems are across the board. and I think they are starting to cause problems right now. We're down to probably 4 minutes. So I wanted to ask you, okay, the common search word probably in the last 5 years, the most popular search word had to be real estate bubble, and in the last 90 days, it's probably changed to subprime mortgage. Do you view the loss of the trust that Wall Street has in buying subprime as significant?
No.
No, okay.
I'm probably on the other side of the fence on that one, too.
Okay.
I think it's an overreaction right now. What people don't know is that Wall Street, meaning the Merrill Lynch, the Bear Stearns, the Goldman Sachs, knew what they were doing. I mean, if they're doing subprime loans and they're getting 8% on these billions and billions of dollars, they were raking in just tons of cash. And it's evident if you look at their quarterly reports even coming in now. So they knew that they were making this much money that there was going to be a high risk factor. And they allowed the subprime people to drop their ratios and accept less qualified buyers. And all that's happened now is that the banks have said, hey, you know, you can still get 100% loan, but your FICO score better be in the 660s, 670s. You better have a good credit record, but we'll make you a 100% loan. So I think like you said, I think it's natural. There's always this fear and overreaction at the beginning, but listen, there is so much money. The liquidity in the financial markets is so great, and there's really only one instrument, and that's home loans, where they can put it out for a long period of time. And the money will always dictate it. So I still see the money being available to the subprime lenders, provided they go back to the original standards.
Do you see any problem with a spillover effect then to Alt-A?
To what? I'm sorry.
To Alt-A products?
Oh, no.
Okay. All right.
See, I guess I come from the viewpoint that we've got $12 trillion of loans out there in America. And in this year, which is going to be one of the biggest years, $1.3 trillion will adjust. That's only 10% of the market. But a lot of these are adjustables that had 3, 5, or 7 year fixed. The only problems are the people that, you know, have loans starting in 2005, unfortunately.
Well,
so I see that as such a small percentage of the market.
Okay. I disagree, but I guess we're going to save that one. We'll save that
one
for a debate someday.
Well, you know what? The future's going to let us know how this all turns out. That's the fun part.
That is true. We really are getting close to running out of time again. I wanted to ask you, what were you most proud of as far as your prognostications over the years? What gives you the most pride to say, you know what, I'm just really happy about that one?
Well, I think it was in 2002 when the bubble burst was coming up, and I told people, the real estate industry, because I don't speak to the general public, I'm only to the real estate industry. And I said to them, I said, listen, please don't let your sellers sell. I don't know where they're getting these numbers. We're in for a really good, solid 2 or 3 years of double-digit appreciation. And they're going to be absolutely sick if they sell now and think that prices are going to come down and wait as tenants. They'll never be able to get back into real estate. And so for those agents that were able to convey that information and not have those sellers sell, that was a good thing for them.
Absolutely. And by the way, I certainly agreed with you at the time. I thought that it was way too early to get out. I was about 8 months too early in saying that we were going to have a slow turn. But you take a much bigger risk. You predict every year. I go out 6 to 8 years and say that's where we're headed, and it inevitably will get there. So
yeah, well, I admire that. I just don't have the intelligence to go out longer than 12 months.
No, I certainly disagree with you there. Thank you, Gary, so much for your time, and I'm sure the audience has learned a lot from what we talked about.
Well, Bruce, thanks so much for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
All right, Gary, thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.